This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.
It is 9:27. Dr. Judy Ho joins us, clinical and forensic neuropsychologist, host of the Supercharged Life podcast. It is election season, and we're going to talk about how everybody should handle disagreements between parents and adult kids. And I will ask you at 504-260-1870 to weigh in on what your experience has been, both either as the parent of an adult kid or a parent with an adult kid. And with that, we welcome in Dr. Judy Ho. How you doing, Dr. Judy?
Hey, Tommy. I'm doing great. How are you?
You don't have an adult kid, but you will at some point. Tell me what you've seen in your practice about some of the common problems between adult kids and their parents.
Well, I think especially with election season and with the holidays upon us, a lot of the older issues tend to resurface even as adults. You know, you would love to think that you're moved past it and you're an adult, you're going to handle this better. But I think that the triggers are still there, and they're especially more palpable when there is grounds that are ripe for disagreement, right? So obviously election season, that could be one, especially if your political views differ from your parents. And then the other piece is, as there's going to be more get-togethers overall over the holiday season, just being in your childhood home or around your family members, it just starts to trigger certain dynamics that, you know, good or bad, that were from your childhood, and just more easily having more emotional reactions as a result.
Are there some, let me put it this way, where does a shifting definition of adulthood fit into this? Because some kids were born older than others, right? Other kids maybe at 20 might still be 10. Other kids at 20 might be 40. There's not one size fits all on this, right?
No, there isn't. And of course, we've just discussed that there has been a shifting of adulting in terms of the time frame. I think people usually thought of adulting as, okay, you finish high school, maybe at that point you move out of the house, you start to become more independent. But, you know, we have a lot more people who are in multi-generational families now. That's not uncommon, especially in other cultures, and it has nothing to do really with adulting. It's just that people tend to live with multi-generational relatives. But I think here, it's not quite the norm yet, although there are some shifts towards that. And then it's a little bit confusing because, you know, maybe your parents are still helping to pay your bills. They're sometimes still helping with your laundry. And it causes a bit of a delay in terms of the way that you might communicate with them if you were fully independent, living on your own, versus, hey, they're still wondering what time you're going to be home and they're folding your laundry when you get back. And maybe you don't have a full-time job, so you're constantly spending time with them or they're in the house. And it just extends a lot of both the pros and cons of childhood.
I know people, I don't know if you want to call it a quid pro quo, whatever you want to call it, but I know people have had disagreements with parents, specifically when their parents are babysitters for their kids, because at one point it's either, well, are you giving your grandkid a present, or are you providing this as a daycare provider, and do I owe you or do I not owe you? Is it business? Is it personal? At what point, since you are babysitting the kid, do you have a right to say how the kid's raised? Because although it is my child and I can raise it how I want, if you're going to be with them, then I am responsible for how they behave. So I guess you do have a say in that. Those waters get pretty muddy quick, can't they?
Yeah, definitely. And of course, as the grandparent, you know, they were your parents, so they still feel like they have an onus to tell you what to do. And that maybe they know better because they've, you know, understandably been a parent for longer than you have. And so, and yet this is your child, so you should be the ultimate decision maker. This happens no matter how well-intentioned people are. You know, my my mom spent a good amount of time taking care of Luca, and, you know, she definitely has some ideas that differ from mine, and sometimes she'll just implement those ideas without asking me first because she doesn't really feel like she has to, right? And then sometimes that ends up being a discussion of, oh, well, why did you do this? And I would do this other thing. And she's like, well, I think this is better. And then, you know, you can kind of see how that goes.
So what are some of the ways to de-escalate, I guess, if you and your parent are getting into it over maybe your child or just over anything? What are some of the landmines that either parents should avoid or adult children should avoid?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, I think that a big part of this is trying to listen to the other person without getting your point across before they finish. So many times when we're listening to others, we're already thinking about how we're going to have a great comeback or here's my argument against your point, which is not a good point. We so often do not listen to try to understand the other person's perspective. I mean, this is a person that you love. This is a relative. This is a family member. You know, even if you have fights with them, you care about them. And so if you can start from that and say, okay, you know, I care about this person and their opinions are valid. They are valued. They are just as valuable as my opinion, even if I don't agree, right? And it's so much more about understanding the other person rather than being right each time. So you have to put your ego aside and at least just open your ears and say, well, I'm open to hearing what they have to say and why they think this way on this issue. Doesn't mean that ultimately you'll be convinced. It's just that you're going to listen because at the very least, you start to have a little bit more empathy for the other person and you understand their viewpoint better. Because so many times when we disagree, we think, well, that's just a stupid idea. Or how could you support this candidate? And, you know, you just want to get up in arms and you want to know and you want to think that that other person's opinion is not the right one or stupid or all of these different negative things you put on it, but they have probably very valid reasons for thinking the way that they do. And I think that if we can start from that place of, let me just hear why you think the way that you do and why you have this opinion, it can go a long way. And the other person will feel the shift too, when you're not just trying to argue and you're just trying to understand.
And it's not just political candidates. I think as a parent of an adult child, I think we all have a vision of what our child is going to be. You probably have a vision right now of what Luca's going to be, don't you?
I actually don't. No? I actually don't. He's only three.
I think it's good for you.
I'm not even three yet.
No, because
I know. I don't really know what he's going to be like as an adult. I'm not sure where that's good. I've actually surprised myself by being relatively mindful during
that's because you're a clinical and forensic neuropsychologist. That's why you're.
Oh, I don't know about that, Tommy. I still have my own neurosis.
I think we all, you know, sometimes tend to think our kid's going to graduate from Princeton and cure cancer and become the president, as well as curing cancer and to make world peace and find a source of renewable energy that's green and everything else, but make everybody
right,
happy.
Right.
And, you know, that doesn't always pan out. Not everybody can go to Yale or Harvard. Not everybody can be a president. Not everybody can do this. Not everybody can do that.
Right.
So I think at some point, as a parent of an adult child, you have to do your best, step back, and then realize that just as you did when you were 18 or 21, whatever you want to pick the age, that your kid's going to make choices, be it a tattoo, be it a piercing, be it whatever, that maybe you would not have made for yourself, but that doesn't make it wrong. And you also have to factor in that it's not 1980.
This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC's senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.
Right?
Right, exactly. And it can be so hard, right? Because we do hang our hopes and dreams on our child. Even if I am relatively mindful at this stage, you know, there is still so much of, you know, wanting Luca to have the best childhood, like, you know, sometimes going even overboard to like make sure he has a good day. Like, you know, that's obviously just a parent, you know, being a parent, you want the best for your kids. And that's where some of these expectations come from. But also, I think if we're being honest with ourselves, some of these expectations come from well, maybe certain unrealized dreams you didn't have as a child or that you didn't get to live out, or maybe you really want your childhood or adulthood to be different than your path, right? You don't want them to go through the difficulties that you did. But in that way, you're not fully allowing them to actualize and figure it out, especially as they get older. They can do that, as opposed to Lucas, almost three. He's not really ready to figure everything out himself. So I think that that's the tough thing. And also, parents, we have all the memories of when they were babies, when they couldn't fend for themselves. And in some ways, that's still imprinted in our minds, even when they're 30. It's like, wait, no, you're still my child, right? And my parents tell me that all the time. You're still our child. And I was like, yeah, I get it. I'll always be your child, no matter how old I get, you know? So I think that, you know, maybe if you're an adult child listening to this and you have some arguments with your parents, it's nice to have a little empathy for where your parents are coming from, especially when they're seemingly a little bit bossy or maybe overbearing. It is coming usually from a good place.
I'm getting a lot of text here about tattoos and parents having a hard time with their adult kids with tattoos because I guess when... You know, somebody texted and said the only people that had tattoos when I was growing up were sailors, and now my daughter has one. that whole dynamic, the paradigm, whatever phrase you want to use, has changed. So how would you tell parents to adjust to adult kids who have tattoos and the parents don't like it? Because I'll tell you, once they show you the tattoo, it's a little late to say, why'd you get that? Because it's not coming off, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah, you know, that's a tough one. Again, you may not have taken this path. You may not have made this decision to permanently decorate your body, but it is, however, your child, you know, your adult child now, body, you know, and you don't have to love it, but it over the grand scheme of things, our life is so short. You got to pick your battles. Is this something that you really want to hang your hat on, have a huge fight about? Or is this something that you can say, hey, look, I'm super annoyed that you did this and I'm not sure I like it, but then you drop it because there's other bigger things to deal with. And ultimately, it's the relationship with your child. And so there's going to be bigger arguments that you might need to have about things that are truly important, maybe relate to your values, how you want to live life, as opposed to why did you do this stupid thing that I wouldn't have done?
But and again, I'm getting a lot of texts on this, to allay fears, the social environment is not what it used to be as it relates to tattoos, right? They don't bear the same stigma that they once did, or do they?
No, I don't think so. I mean, especially if you're in certain circles. I mean, there's some circles of tattooing that is just, I mean, people just love it for the artwork, right? I mean, I think in the past, right, I think what you're alluding to is that in the past, tattoos were kind of associated with a certain image. It's like, you're like a bad boy.
Right.
You know, this means that you're going to get involved in other dangerous activities. And now I know so many people who have tattoos that are just like gentle as a lamb. Like they've got their entire body tatted up and they're just like the kindest individual you've ever met. So I think so many people now do it because they love the artwork. And that's a really different vibe than 30 or 40 years ago.
Yeah, and I think parents, you cannot maybe like the way it looks on your kid. That's one thing, but you got to remember it's your kid. And the other thing you got to do is remember that times have changed if you're trying to protect them. I would suggest to anyone, maybe not on the face.
Mm-hmm.
Thoughts?
Exactly. Yeah, I think that is really tough because it does connote a certain... certain image, one, and two, it's not professional for certain jobs, right? I mean, people are not going to hire you if you have, you know, a face full of tattoos for certain industries. That's not true of every job,
right.
But, you know, there is a snap decision that we all make. And I don't know if we talked about this, Tommy, but first impressions are so hard to break.
Mm-hmm.
One first impression takes 13 things and situations that would be and like basically the opposite of that first impression for you to say, oh, maybe my first impression was wrong. So if you think about a person who was late to a first meeting, right, you literally have to be early or on time for 13 more meetings before your boss and your coworkers like, oh, this is not a person who's flaky and late. I mean, so that it's hard to break when somebody makes an impression about you.
We're going to talk about that at some point in the future. Real quick, before we let you go, somebody texted and said, how to handle a relationship with a child's girlfriend, boyfriend that you don't approve. I can tell them this.
Oh, boy.
From a parent standpoint, if you want to drive them toward that person, start criticizing that person and forbid them from seeing them. That'll drive them over there like you wouldn't believe.
True.
But your thoughts?
I agree with you. I mean, look, you cannot control all of these things and you have to just do your best. And I think the first question that you should ask and the most important is just, does this person make my child happy? And if they treat your child well and they make them happy, then I think maybe just you'll have to keep your opinions relatively to yourself. Although you can, of course, express them. You can say, look, you know, he's not my favorite or she's not my favorite. But there's nothing you can do to control it. And like you said, Tommy, the more that you force a wedge, the more they'll stick together. And before you know it, it's their wedding day. So got to just breathe and try to focus on the big picture. Do they make my child happy? And if so, try your best to accept them, even if you don't love them.
Thank you, Dr. Judy. A pleasure as always. Dr. Judy O, clinical and forensic neuropsychologist, host of the Supercharged Life podcast, 941. When we come back, Newell Norman's going to join us a little bit early because he was the sheriff of Jefferson Parish, as we all know, and he was, I forgot the Latin term for it, the tax collector officios or some kind of stuff like that. And we're going to talk about the governor's plan and inventory taxes and local governments and sales taxes, because who better to find out the way it works, who better to find it out from than Newell Norman, who's dealt with it. 942, 18 till 10, traffic now, WWL.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app